Let's consider restrictive covenant payments. What is it? Where a payment is made in consequence of the employee agreeing to some form of restriction on the business activities after leaving the employment, that payment or any valuable consideration given instead of cash will be outside of the Section 401 exemption provisions and will in fact be liable to income tax and Class 1 national insurance contributions under what is Section 225 ITPA 2003. Revenue guidance on this says if the non-competition, non-solicitation and or confidentiality clause is included in the contract of employment, there may be no payment made for the restrictions. The revenue seems to be happy with that if there isn't a payment. If there is a clause included in the termination agreement, any payment would be liable to income tax and national insurance contributions. In practice, you may often see a nominal payment as low as a pound, sometimes £500, made in respect of the restrictive covenant provisions in a termination agreement. As I say, that payment has to be liable to income tax and national insurance contributions. Okay, non-approved retirement benefit scheme payments. The former Inland Revenue published a statement of practice, Statement of Practice number 13 of 1991, in October 91, notifying a change of the revenue's practice in relation to ex gratia payments made on the termination of an office or employment when made on retirement or death. And these payments were held to be outside of the Section 401 exemption provisions because effectively they were pension arrangements. There was, up until A-Day 6th of April 2006, an arrangement in force where small, modest tax-free ex gratia awards in lieu of pensions could be agreed, but the changes brought about by the pension changes for 6th of April 2006, commonly known as A-Day, means that these provisions don't apply. Therefore, I'm only mentioning them in practice, so you're aware of the fact that the old arrangements with the revenue no longer apply. Another arrangement that is often forgotten about is the special provisions for the exemption for foreign service. There are special provisions that may provide for exemption of perhaps the full amount of any termination payment if that payment is linked to foreign service. The requirements are if that service amounted to at least 75% of the total service, or if it covered the whole of the last 10 years of service, then the termination payment would be fully exempt from tax. There would be no £30,000 limit. Alternatively, where the length of service exceeded 20 years and the foreign service element represented at least 50% of the total, and there were at least 10 years of foreign service within the last 20 years, the full exemption would still apply. Where the foreign service does not qualify for full exemption, a proportionate reduction may be claimed and it would be calculated on a pro rata basis. I think the important message to you is that this exemption is often overlooked and personnel files should be noted as employee with foreign service for future reference. Look out for it if you're aware of a client who has had postings overseas, that type of thing. Okay, next, another major area is the compromise agreements. The fact that an employer director has entered into a compromise agreement with the employer should not be taken to mean that payments made under the compromise agreement are tax-free up to the £30,000 Section 401 limit. This is another mistake that's often made and an assumption that's wrongly made, where a compromise agreement is put in place and it's assumed that therefore any payment under that agreement will be tax-free. What is a compromise agreement all about anyway? A compromise agreement is designed to avoid a compensation claim going to an employment tribunal. The employer and the employer director reach in an agreement under the Employment Rights Act on any claims for compensation. It usually means that there's an agreement put in place and that the director or employee has to get separate legal advice from a qualified lawyer which says that the agreement which he is about to sign is okay. As far as dealing with the tax and NIC treatment is concerned, it is very important to look at the constituent parts of the agreement. Following the guidance that I've talked about already, in terms of whether the payment's contractual or non-contractual, whether it's a payment in lieu of notice or what have you. The agreement may be written in terms of a full and final settlement, and sometime in the past the revenue were arguing that that was a form of restrictive covenant. More guidance has come out since then, and that's not the way it's treated. Unless there is a specific sum attributable to the undertaking, liability will not arise on the whole package. But as I say, you need to look at the constituent parts. If the compromise agreement includes payments for contractual holiday pay, payments of outstanding bonus or commission, then it may be that elements of the figure included in the compromise agreement are liable to tax and NICs. Look at them carefully. Don't assume, as I say, that because it's a compromise agreement, it's not taxable.